Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. We're possibly named Welcome to Bronco Land. I still haven't passed that by.
Are they still pushing Broncos country?
Well, of course.
I thought they were. Yeah, that's... And Broncos country's now had a 10-year run. Because it was initially brought forth by the marketing department back in 2005 or 2005, depending on what you prefer. And it actually, you know, it was interesting to see how that term took root rather than, say, Broncos Nation.
Well, everyone else is blah, blah, blah nation.
Right. And there are some blogs, and I know some of those bloggers out there listen to this podcast. So shout out to you all who've been in this long-running debate about Broncos country or Broncos nation. It's actually led to some very heated discussions among Broncos fans. And now Bronco Land has been thrown into the mix.
A new rival for Disneyland. I guess it's Dolly World. Is it not?
No, it's Dollywood.
Dollywood.
Dollywood in Patient Forge, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Well, you could have there's Busch Gardens to give Bronco Gardens. And you have
I like that.
You have Bronco Elish Gardens downtown. Nice. Maybe this is a branding opportunity. The Broncos should buy Elish Gardens and make it Bronco Gardens and have the entire park be a Bronco theme.
Like Edward Scissorhands kind of making making figures, statues.
You can take the galloping horses statue out front on the south side of the Sports Authority Field at Mile High. You can do that in the hedges, you know, trim those horses. You know, you can do the Bronco logos in the hedges. You can do all sorts of stuff.
You can pair it with the botanical gardens and make it a destination. Why not?
Yeah, I have this idea from a long time ago. I worked at the ESPN Worldwide headquarters in Bristol, Connecticut, when they had the NFL.com contract. There is an amusement park across the street from ESPN called Lake Compounds. And I said, you know, this company is owned by Disney, ESPN.
Right.
Why not buy Lake Compounds and make it ESPN World?
Well, you see, they're just a little startup. They don't really have a whole lot of money.
That's why they're still in Bristol, Connecticut.
Exactly. Man, it's been a while. I've been on vacation for a couple of weeks. It's been a minute since we've had podcasts, and we did Phil with that one right before my vacation.
Phil, so
it's been a while since we've both been on it.
Yeah, because you miss. I feel almost a little bit out of sorts.
Well, I tried to keep up with it. I was on a little island off the east coast of North Carolina, Bald Head Island. No cell phone reception there. It was wonderful. As someone who...
That's a vacation.
Yes. I'm so connected to screens all day long, all week long. It was nice to kind of get away from that a little bit. But obviously, I had my finger on the pulse as much as I could.
You actually wrote one of the stories on Pat Bowlen going into the Ring of Fame last week from Bald Head Island.
We had an internet connection, luckily. So I was kind of tuned in for Mr. B's election to the Ring of Fame. Sorry, so that was a good moment. He's been such a leading figure here at Dove Valley and at Mile High. So I thought that was a pretty powerful moment. I definitely wanted to get my hand in on that, given the opportunity, even on vacation.
And the next thing is the Hall of Fame. That's what you hope comes after this, and now, with the increased emphasis on getting contributors in the Hall of Fame, there was two spots in last year's class devoted to the contributors, and they end up being Bill Polian and Ron Wolf, the general managers of quite a bit of renown from decades in the league. This year there's one. Next year there's two contributors again. I mean this coming season, the class that will be announced in February 25th, 2016 at the Super Bowl. So this next go-around, there'll be one. After that, there'll be two. You'd hope that Pat Bowlen would get some traction for that. Certainly, it's not like you're treading on new ground putting an owner in the Hall of Fame. But you look at a lot of the owners that are in there, it's guys like, you know, it's the Maras, the Rooneys, George Halas.
People
that founded the league, the NFL, or founded the AFL, because you have Lamar Hunt and Ralph Wilson and Al Davis, you know, for example, all in the Hall of Fame. So Pat Bowlen being in the Hall of Fame as not part of the origin of the AFL or NFL, and not a scion to a dynasty like Dan Rooney and Wellington Mara, it would be a big thing for him to get in. But certainly all the owners that are already in, I think Pat Bowlen stacks up very well.
Maybe a rule of thumb, if you've owned a team for over a couple of decades and you have more Super Bowl appearances than losing seasons, that's kind of maybe a good rule of thumb to kind of elect someone into the Hall of Fame.
I think so. And that would rule out, say, the late Bud Adams from Houston/Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Not that I thought he would get much traction anyway.
You know, speaking of
Bud Adams, I have a friend who used to work on this website, Kyle Sonneman, and he used to work for the Tennessee Titans. If we had him on, he could do a mean Bud Adams impression, but I can't do it as well as he can.
You know, speaking of Houston Oilers, I was doing some research on Bum Phillips, Wade Phillips' father. And did you know there was a Bum Phillips opera?
I didn't know that, but it wouldn't surprise me, because he's the kind of character that would lend himself well to something in the performing arts in his honor. You know, very similar to how there's a play that I believe it was Dick Enberg who wrote it, about Al McGuire, the famous college basketball coach turned analyst for multiple decades on NBC and CBS. And they had a lot. I mean, they were from, you know, different parts of the map, had different personalities, but they both were these larger-than-life characters, and certainly Bum Phillips is one of the great characters that has ever come through the National Football League. And right now, Ben is showing me the picture from a story on the New York Times website about the Bum Phillips All-American Opera.
I find it kind of, wow. I mean, he's definitely the character that...
It's called Love Ya Bum, Love Ya Bum, right?
Yes.
Love Ya Bum, in honor of the old Love Ya Blue phrase.
You know,
wow, this might actually get me to go see an opera.
How long ago was that? I don't know if it's
2014.
A year ago.
Well, you know what, though? First of all, and I'm glad the article mentions his name, Owl Andrew, and Owl is spelled, Owl is spelled O-A-I-L, or Owl, I believe.
Owl.
You know, we're going down to Houston this summer for a preseason game. Maybe some, you know, Houston has a thriving theater district. If I'm not mistaken, isn't it the largest theater district in the country outside of New York City? Is in Houston.
You got me.
Yeah,
I'm not up to date on the opera.
Maybe outside New York and Chicago is in Houston. It's a big performing arts town. Something that I think most people wouldn't expect out of Houston. And, you know, maybe someone is performing the Bum Phillips All-American Opera.
That would be awesome.
In Houston. Okay, now that this exists, I have to see this.
Right?
I have to see this opera.
I kind of wonder if... I mean, Wade's got to know about it. They ran it by Bum to get his approval. So I would think Wade knows about it. I wonder if he's seen it, because he wasn't coaching last year.
True, and he did some traveling last year. Like, his son Wes was on Washington staff, and you know he was up in Washington, not too far from New York, where this would have gone on. Yeah, and would not surprise me. That is definitely worth asking. It played from, looks like, according to a story on sportsonearth.com, there was an ad that showed it playing from March 12th to the 30th of 2014 in New York. Gosh. But it's been written, okay? So it's been written. It can be
wait.
You think it can be produced elsewhere.
When was it playing?
2014. So it was during the off season of 2014.
Oh, during the off season. I was about to say
March.
That would have been an interesting, like, Super Bowl activity.
Oh gosh, if it had been going on during Super Bowl week when the Broncos were there, I would have
been there.
Right? I would have found a way to get there. Yes. That would have been worth an evening.
Mace would have been transcribing and posting stories from the Opera House.
Well, you know.
That's a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
It is, and the funny thing, I don't remember Bum so much from his Oilers days. I was a little bit too young, but I was really starting to get into football when he coached the Saints, and even though it wasn't quite as successful, I mean, he was still the same character. This guy, you know, he had the Stetson that he wore, but he only wore it for games outdoors. So most of the games that Bum coached, he didn't wear the hat because he believed in the old common notion of common courtesy that a man should take his hat off indoors. That etiquette. So when all the shots you see of him in the Stetson, they're always in Pittsburgh or Dallas or Texas. There's one of the best shots NFL films ever had. They got the shadow just right, and all you see is that it's against the backdrop of the hole in the roof at Old Texas Stadium, and you see the Stetson. I believe that was taken on Thanksgiving Day, 1979. It's just one of the signature images for any coach that's ever come through the NFL. But I mean, just a big time character. You know, he almost got the Saints going. He actually came within a last-second field goal in 1983 of leading the Saints to their what would have been their first playoff appearance and their first winning season. It was Mike Lansford of the Rams that hit the field goal in Week 16 at the Superdome, sent the Saints home 8-8 out of the playoffs, and they kind of regressed from there, and it was actually another 4 years before they got to the postseason. But, you know, at the time, also, his defensive coordinator was his son, Wade Phillips, and the reason I mention that is there was they ran a 3-4, and there was a future Hall of Fame strong side outside linebacker by the name of Ricky Jackson. And if you look back at what Ricky did back in those days and the kind of holy terror he was out there, there's a lot that can be applied, I think, to Von Miller going forward. So you can look back at those old Saints teams and not just get a little bit of nostalgia for Bum Phillips, but also maybe get a look at the way that Von Miller is going to be used and some ideas that might be brought forth on the Broncos' defense this year.
Real briefly, I'm looking at the team page, and the offensive coordinator for that team, King Hill. With all this Texas talk, I mean, if you've seen the show King of the Hill, I wonder if there's more than just a coincidental kind of connection there, but
That's interesting. I mean, he's an old Texas guy. Went to Rice. Played for a while. Died 3 years ago, I believe. King Hill. He was the only offense. And actually, I'm looking at his resume now. The only offensive coordinator Bum Phillips ever had as a head coach, because he was the OC in Houston, and then he went with him to New Orleans in 1981. Interesting, but. Yeah, good times. But yeah, King Hill, King of the Hill. The only thing that would be better is if King Hill's middle name was Hank.
Yeah.
It's Stewart.
Yeah. That's just unfortunate. Well, his middle name is King. And his first name is Stewart.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking like his Wikipedia bio says it's King Stewart Hill.
Huh. Okay.
Which one are you looking at?
I'm looking at Pro Football Reference.
Oh, okay.
That's a good name, King Hill.
That's a football name. I hate to put the cliche on it. That is a football name. And even at its quarterback's name in particular, and of course he was a quarterback back in the day. That's perfect. Naturally. King Hill.
Moving forward, I mean, that's a great little segment. But
although I guess because he was only the coordinator, he was a prince instead of a king on the coaching staff.
He never quite ascended to king.
Yeah.
I guess I've missed a little bit over the past couple of weeks with player availability. I was able to catch this most recent one that was on Wednesday. Yeah, on Wednesday with Darian Stewart leading off and Ben Garland and Vance Walker all giving their media availability. Frankly, the theme of it was just that position competition is heating up.
Mm-hmm.
All the practices they've been having, the real big theme is that it's been really competitive, a lot of energy, and I mean there's a lot of reason to it.
And they haven't been able to do all that much, and you've already got the competition heating up. That's why OTAs starting next Wednesday are going to be fascinating to watch, because we're going to start to see that competition crystallizing and start seeing where guys line up, especially, you know, on the offensive line. That's going to be the one to watch.
There are 14 linemen on the roster right now.
And really, there are 14 linemen. And of the five starting spots, really, we only have an idea on two.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have Clady and you have Vasquez.
Yeah, you have the two guys who've been recent All Pros. You don't worry about them. You figure they're going to be able to make the transition. I mean, obviously, you know, it's going to be a little different for Luis Vasquez, but you know, when you've got that kind of skill set, he should be able to do fine. And then Ryan Clady, another year removed from the foot injury, going back to zone blocking, which is what he was drafted for in the first place. And you know, yeah, there were some zone principles that were used in the offense the last few years, but this is definitely more of a zone heavy scheme than they had in the past, more zone intensive. So Clady's going to do what he does best. But left guard, center, right tackle, I mean, these are the competitions to watch, and because you need to build cohesion and chemistry on that offensive line, how those competitions shake out over the next 4 weeks is crucial, because you want to get most of that group together that you're going to be starting in week one. You want most of it together when you start training camp, so they have that entire time. You don't want to be doing a lot of shuffling when you get to training camp and hindering the attempts to build that chemistry for the group. So, you know, I think we're going to have a good idea by the end of OTAs who the favorites are at the position. I mean, at each position, certainly. I mean, you know, you've got experienced options at left guard, at center, at right tackle. Left guard, Shelly Smith. Mm-hmm. Center, Gino Gradkowski. Right tackle, you know, Chris Clark. But at the same time, Tyson Brailo at right tackle has got a high ceiling. At center, you're going to see Matt Paradis get a look, and also you're going to see, you know, you may see Max Garcia get a few reps. And
Michael Schofield.
And then Schofield could be in the mix at left guard or right tackle, although Gary Kubiak said right after the draft that when the offseason work got underway, he was going to be working at left tackle behind Ryan Clady quite a bit because they want him to learn that side, and because at the minimum they need Michael Schofield to be a swing tackle who can be the first guy off the bench at left tackle and right tackle. They'd like him to develop into that at minimum, and so that's why they give him some snaps on the left side with the second team. Left guard, Shelly Smith is the experienced option, but Ben Garland, who spoke this week, you look at his athleticism, his footwork. You know, he's had to put on some pounds as far as transitioning first, you know, to becoming an NFL defensive tackle in the Broncos practice squad after, you know, serving in the Air Force for a couple of years and then going to offensive line. But he's bulked up, but he's kept that footwork that he had when he came in here. And that's the kind of thing that could serve him well as far as zone blocking goes. Really, it's a matter of him continuing to learn how to be an offensive lineman because it's only his third year doing it. Now, something that I asked him when he had his availability, he had a chance to work with Alex Gibbs back in 2013, and Alex Gibbs, a lot of longtime Bronco fans know, is the guru of zone blocking. He was the offensive line coach here for a while. If you ever went to a training camp practice when Gibbs was on the staff at various points in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, you probably won't forget a lot of what he said, even if you can't repeat it in elegant company because there were a lot of profanities. But he gets the point across, and through the torrent of expletives, he's an outstanding teacher of zone blocking. Well, in 2013, Alex Gibbs was on the coaching staff as a consultant, and a big part of his job was working with practice squad guys, and at the time, Ben Garland was on the practice squad as an offensive lineman. Of course, he was on the 53-man roster last year, and you know, Garland, you know, said that the advice and the teaching that Alex Gibbs gave him was invaluable in making him what he is. That he wouldn't be here without being exposed to Alex Gibbs, and frankly, I think that gives him a leg up because so much of what Rick Dennison and Clancy Barone are teaching comes from Alex Gibbs, in particular from Dennison when he does do some offensive line work, when he gets involved with Clancy Barone, because Dennison learned how to coach the offensive line from working with and under Alex Gibbs. And then when Gibbs went into kind of semi-retirement, Alex Gibbs had many attempts at retirement over the years. None of them have quite taken. But he did, you know, you know, a little over a decade ago, he did hand the offensive line reins off to Rick Dennison, and that's allowed him to really, you know, make his reputation as an offensive line guru. And so much of what Dennison got is from came from what he learned working with Alex Gibbs, and now Gibbs had that hands-on work with Garland, and that may give him a little bit of a leg up.
Also with Garland, you asked at the press conference about studying the tape that they have about the zone blocking tape that they have from previous years. And it reminded me of when we went on this trip to, was it Greeley? We did this fans tour not too long ago, maybe a month. And he stuck around to have dinner after it was all done before we headed back to Denver. And he was just like attached to his iPad. It has all this tape on it. Mm-hmm. The guy was just like studying the whole time on.
Well, you can't blame him because, as you mentioned, there's 14 offensive linemen, and with what they brought in, you know, trading for Gradkowski, signing Shelly Smith, bringing back Chris Clark, drafting Tyson Brillo, drafting Max Garcia, you have Matt Paradis coming back from a year on the practice squad. It's a pretty stiff competition, and Ben Garland certainly knows that. For his time in the league, he's got to stick now or it may never happen. This is the most crucial offseason of his career. Even if the Broncos had not had the coaching staff's change and the scheme tweaks that they're undergoing, it would have been a pivotal offseason for Ben Garland. Now, with new coaches coming in, he's got to prove himself a little bit all over again. And so, really, this is the fork in the road for Ben Garland. So, you know, you got the sense that he was going to leave no stone unturned. There was going to be no time wasted on his part on, you know, anything superfluous, that everything he's got is poured into his effort to either become a starter or at least solidify a role as a backup on this offensive line and show show Clancy Barone, show Rick Dennison that he can continue to develop. The thing with Ben Garland that's interesting, you don't know what his ceiling is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Shelly Smith, he's got some starting experience. You know, this is going to be his sixth camp. You have an idea what he is. You have an idea what he is. Ben Garland, you don't know. That could be to his advantage, and certainly, you know, if he comes out and plays well and shows some potential and room for growth, he can earn that job. He's got a shot. But he's got to do very well. This is, you know, the next 3 months. I'm not overstating it. This is what's going to make or break Ben Garland's career in all likelihood.
It's like I think there's that Donald Rumsfeld quote, there are known knowns, there are known unknowns, and there are unknown knowns and unknown unknowns.
Me and the whole press corps was like, "What?"
Ben Garland is a known unknown.
Yes. He's known around this building because his first camp was all the way back in 2010. I mean, you know, how many guys I'm just thinking, how many guys are left from the 2010 training camp? Clady, Britton Colquitt, David Bruton, who's in a competition himself with Darian Stewart at free safety. Demaryius Thomas once he gets his tender signed.
They were in the same kind of
year.
You already mentioned Clady.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's not. I think he's definitely one of the longest tenured with the Broncos as far as how many years he's been here. Not active experience, which he has two.
Well, and the interesting thing with Garland in 2010, in that camp, if he had made the 53-man roster, he was basically he'd gotten clearance to kind of defer his service to the Air Force. They were going to let him play if he made the 53, but he didn't, and then he went ahead and did his 2-year commitment, and the rest of his commitment was to be done through the Air Force reserves. But I'm looking at the roster just to make sure that, you know, I think Tony Carter might have been in that camp as well. Or maybe he was in Patriots camp then. He was kind of bouncing around back then.
We have like the sheets of when they came into
the
league.
We do.
And I think he was one of the earliest folks here. I don't think Carter was in.
Well, he joined. Yeah, he bounced around for a bit. Like he was with the Broncos for part of like for part of 09, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, okay, here we go. I have his transactions. Tony Carter, waived by Denver in 09, signed the practice squad 09.
Okay.
Waived. Yep, he was in camp in 2010, and then got waived. Then went to New England, then went to Minnesota, and then came back in 2011. So he hasn't been here continuously, but he's the other guy who's left from that camp. But wow, Garland, Tony Carter, Clady, Demaryius Thomas, David Bruton Jr. I'll tell you what, the fact that Tony Carter is on that list shows you what kind of survivor that young man is.
Not many left.
No, I mean, he's always on the fringes, but he finds a way to stick. And the lesson of that is, when you've got blinding straight line speed like Tony Carter, you're going to have a place somewhere in this league.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when he gets, you know, with him, it's always been about, you know, the issue's always been about changes of direction and coverage. But, boy, you see it when he's going straight ahead, he can fly. And as we've seen over the years, he has an incredible knack for making plays with the football. You know, he at the end of last year, yeah. Right place, right time, touchdown on the fumble recovery that was forced by Laurenti McRae.
Yeah.
You know? I remember when it happened. And I saw Tony Carter with the ball. And I'm like, of course it's Tony Carter. That's what he does.
When you find the place to make those plays, I guess you definitely have a place somewhere in the NFL. You can mm-hmm. usually sniff those out.
Sure.
You mentioned David Bruton real quick.
Mm-hmm.
That safety position has been a place of contention too. Darian Stewart, when he was first signed, he said that. That's his spot,
and he's still saying that.
And he's
good for him because I like that confidence. You know, it's you don't want guys. You don't want guys who are thinking, well, maybe I can earn it. You know, no. You want guys who are saying that job is mine. Darian Stewart's saying it's my job. David Bruton is saying I can win that job. You mm-hmm. know, that's my job too. That's you know they're going to make each other better. That will be an interesting competition. I think ultimately. Yes, one will be the starter, but whoever does not earn that job, Wade Phillips is going to find ways to get that guy on the field.
Yeah.
Going to find situations, at the minimum, to keep the starter fresh, but also, you know, as part of some dime tag packages, and we saw that with David Bruton last year, late in the season. You know, he did have a start, of course, you know, after injuries hit the safety core, but, you know, even before then, he was seeing some more snaps when T.J. Warb was going into the box as a linebacker in sub packages, and he was making some plays,
mm-hmm.
especially on
effective.
Screen passes. Yeah, again, another guy that on a straight line, when you get him going, point A to point B, fewer, faster.
He made some pretty big plays in that Kansas City game. He made some pretty big stops, I remember. Not to mention the special teams.
That's there's a reason why he has the C on his jersey. I mean,
yeah.
he's a special teams leader. It will, you know, and certainly I think. Jody Camillus is going to lean on guys like David Bruton to provide the leadership that he wants to see out of that special teams, trying to get some improvement, trying to get more energy, and also trying to reduce the mistakes from what they made last year.
They've also drafted a safety, Josh Norman, out of Oklahoma State.
Furman.
Josh Furman, yeah. Why is he thinking Norman?
You're thinking of a Panthers.
That's right, yeah. Anyway,
remember we both have Charlotte connections here, people.
Well, Furman also has Carolina connections, at least. Anyway,
well, there's a school called Furman, yes.
Exactly. Yes.
Furman in Greenville.
It all ties into the Carolinas. That's what you learned from this podcast. Josh Furman, a safety at Oklahoma State, kind of talked about him during the draft time, has potential to play a little bit of a linebacker, kind of like mm-hmm. that T.J. Ward, I think, box guy.
Mm-hmm.
So. He might not be competing for that safety spot yet, but he has some potential to be a weapon in multiple aspects.
I'm going to be fascinated to watch his progress because he had such limited game work in college, really didn't play extensively until he got to Oklahoma State. He was able to make that transfer because he graduated from Michigan and was in, and had a year of eligibility left, and so he went to Oklahoma State without having to lose a year. Played very well, aggressive, and then had an outstanding pro day. So you look at his measurables in terms of size, speed, strength, and say, you know, this guy has the raw tools to play in this league. It's just a matter of how much he's going to be able to learn, because when you don't have as much playing time experience from the college level, you know, you haven't seen quite as much. There's going to be some things that are thrown at him that are probably new, especially when they get into the full speed reps of training camp and then in the preseason games. But intriguing prospect, certainly. You know, you look at him, and then Omar Bolden, who's in the last year of his rookie contract, moved over from cornerback to safety. He's in the mix as well.
Josh Bush.
Yeah, Josh Bush comes back, and he was on the 53-man roster late last year after injury struck on the defense. So, you know, that's going to be an interesting competition. Now, that being said, unlike the offensive line at safety, at free safety specifically, you're looking at one spot in the secondary that has the question marks, and the others are set because you've got Pro Bowler, Pro Bowler, Pro Bowler, and then your number three cornerback played as well as any rookie defensive back in the league last year in Bradley Roby. So not a lot of questions at the other spots, unlike the offensive line where there are more spots that are uncertain than certain.
To kind of wrap this episode up, I saw this link many a time crossing through my Twitter feed of a man at Charlotte's airport who stripped nude because his flight got overbooked. An elderly gentleman, I will say. How do you get so mad that you just bare it all for the public eyes to see at an airport?
Well, if it were the summertime, I would offer the theory that maybe the AC was on the fritz and it was a little bit stifling in the concourse, and he just felt like he had to cool off a bit. The question is, once he stripped down, did he go decamp to one of the waiting rocking chairs that they have in the terminal?
No, he decanted into the arms of waiting police officers.
Oh well, that's and I'm sure they put some a blanket on him before they hauled him through the terminal past the Bojangles.
Not in this photo. unless this blurred rectangle was theirs, they just somehow attached it to him for all people taking photos. But yeah, he's out there for the entire world to see.
Yeah, I didn't see the photo. I just figured when I said there was a Bojangles, I figured, you know, okay, if you're going to walk him all the way back through the terminal, then at some point you're going to walk past the Bojangles. But let's see here.
We got Bojangles on vacation. Oh. I got Bojangles, and I was drinking cheer wine. It was like, what I was looking forward to.
Oh, I'm gonna be in Asheville in a few days for a couple of days. I'm sure I'm gonna make a stop.
Oh, yeah, it was
Bojangles. You need to expand to Colorado.
Public. Yeah. On the stock market, I guess. I never saw that coming.
If we could get Bojangles, In-N-Out, and Taco Del Mar, which is a fish burrito, fish taco chain out of the Pacific Northwest. They were briefly in Fort Collins, and they retreated. If we could get those three out here, I'd never have to leave in terms of my fast food needs.
Well, that's one of the benefits of being in the middle of the country.
True. You figure eventually it's all gonna come here in Kansas City.
It's the laws of astrophysics, isn't that everything is expanding? So yes. Naturally, you can extrapolate that to fast food chains.
Yeah, it would all expand throughout the country, and then eventually it would all be here.
Well, that.
I did find the photos of this elderly gentleman.
Putting Charlotte on the map.
Yeah, as if one of the civic slogans is Charlotte's got a lot. Indeed.
Hashtag dad bod, I guess.
That's granddad bod, this guy has.
I do feel bad. I know how frustrating it must be to be booked for a flight, and then they're like, that's just the way airports or airlines do it, I guess, is overbook flights just because they assume that someone's not going to make it or something. Yeah. That's tough. That's tough. You might have been planning a vacation.
It's one of the worst things about the airline industry. He was going to Jamaica, by the way.
Oh. So, yeah, he was planning a vacation, probably, and now he's maybe he was not going to get to go.
Well, maybe he was going to a nudist beach resort in Jamaica, and if he couldn't go, he's like, if I can't go to the nudist resort, I'm going to bring the nudist resort right here to gate D4 at Charlotte Douglas Airport.
Well, now he's bringing it back to his house, I'm sure. With that, we'll retire the podcast for the week. We'll be back next week as we get closer to OTAs. We got a little short 4-day weekend here with the at least for us, the offices are closed on Friday. So we got a little vacation of sorts with Memorial Day, and then there's going to be a golf outing for members of the team. That'll be on Tuesday. We'll be there to cover that. So that'll be kind of fun. Relaxation. Summertime's here. Getting out there on the
and a good way to chill before, as the competition that we mentioned is going to heat up Wednesday, and we'll have plenty of coverage of practice. And
I just hope that the weather breaks. This rainy weather is completely throwing me off.
I love it. Everything's fresh.
In my
neighborhood, Wash Park, I've never seen it so lush and verdant. It's lovely.
Okay, this is true. Like, we have some flowers out on our little, whatever, if you can call it a porch. It's like just some steps and stuff. We put a little flower pots out there. And those flowers are sticking just straight up. They're as strong as they've ever been.
The weeds are also as strong as they've ever been, too. That's the only problem.
Yeah.
Now the weeds have grown so much, I can't tell the weeds from the plants. Like, I was walking past my front yard today, and I'm like, okay, I think that's a weed, but I really don't know. It's actually flowering. It actually doesn't look too bad.
Well, if it wasn't called a weed, it'd probably be pretty nice, right?
Hey, a rose in a garden of daffodils is a weed.
That's true. The botanist.
It's all a matter of perspective.
Yes, the botanist in us all.
We touch on everything here.
Yeah, you get a healthy dosage of learning and knowledge, as much as from football as opera. We're teaching you about the fine arts of ecology of nature, and ecology of artistic ventures.
Well put.
And so with that, we'll see y'all next week. Thanks for listening.